You can now relive the best moments of the UEFA Champions League 24/7. The UEFA Champions League channel is a new 24-hour streaming channel serving nonstop goals, highlights, and full match replays from the world's most prestigious club competition. Reminisce on your favorite moments, legendary players, and brilliant goals with the UEFA Champions League channel, streaming around the clock on Pluto TV and the CBS Sports app.
Jeremy Renner returns to Paramount Plus for a brand new season of the original hit series, Mayor of Kingstown.
My job is to create a balance, avoid a war.
From executive producer Taylor Sheridan, co-creator of Yellowstone.
There's some new players in town, and they brought the flag.
And Antoine Fuqua, director of Training Day.
I know it's always been a war zone, Mike, but this is next level.
The mayor is back in business.
Are you warning me? You're going to find out.
Mayor of Kingstown, new season streaming June 2nd, exclusively on Paramount Plus.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Wolverine 24/7 podcast, your audio source for all things Michigan football, basketball, and recruiting. I'm your host, Zach Shaw. Steve Lorenz is here with me, and we are going to talk about takeaways from Michigan's annual spring game. If May's team beat the blue team 17-7, there were some stats, and we'll drop a few in there. But really, obviously, this is an intra-squad scrimmage. It's really more about seeing what players can do, you know, who's progressed during spring practices, who looks bulked up or slimmed down. And I always forget every year. I always think like, oh, I've got, you know, I'll be looking out for this. And I forget that they play each other. So it's like kind of hard to watch the offense and the defense at the same time. So we'll obviously have, you know, more from the game over at the MichiganInsider.com, Michigan@247sports.com in terms of content. We got to talk to six or seven players after the game, including Alex Orji. Kirk Campbell spoke after the game. I think Sharon Moore will speak Monday or Tuesday. So, you know, having their thoughts as well can help fuel maybe the written analysis. But in terms of the podcast, we're mainly just talking about kind of what we saw. We had a preview episode, which I think touched on some of the key storylines we were watching heading into this. And then this episode, we'll take a look at kind of what we learned or what stood out to us. And Steve, we're going to start on offense. Probably got to start at quarterback. I wrote this, I had a story, offensive observations from this game. I think the big thing for me is I'm comfortable calling this a two-man starting quarterback battle right now. Alex Orji and Davis Warren, who I don't know if I would have penciled him in as most likely to be the number two, but in terms of how Michigan was using the quarterbacks in Saturday's scrimmage, but also how they looked, you know, ability to read the defense, the throws they were making versus the throws the other quarterbacks were still struggling with. It does seem like Orji and Warren have elevated themselves slightly more than Jane Denegal, Jane Davis. I don't think Jack Tuttle is healthy just yet. So, but I also don't know if he would necessarily push for that starting job either. But Steve, that was kind of my big takeaway is, hey, it was a five-man competition. I think it's down to two. What jumped out to you the most about the quarterback position?
I think what jumped out the most was just Davis Warren's performance, right? I think we, particularly after you watched the first drive, you know, it took Alex Orji a couple throws to kind of get in rhythm, get going a little bit, and you're like, okay, you can totally see why he has felt like the guy, at least he feels like the guy that Michigan would like to see take control of this quarterback situation. But then Davis Warren came in and made some of the, probably the outside of the O'Leary drop, which was a beautiful throw by Jaden Davis. Warren made probably the other two or three best throws of the day and drove the team down the field twice. I mean, for the Fred Moore touchdown was a short pass, but either way, kind of did what you'd like to see. I guess, again, I don't go overboard off of watching just because this is like the one practice we get extended look. So I'm still not like changing my opinion from the preview episode about the quarterback position. I still think totally depending on who enters, I think Michigan absolutely has to keep their options open. But I would say maybe I think maybe the top two exceeded expectations that I had. Slightly. I'm in agreement with you as far as didn't necessarily think Davis Warren would be the, not so much not be the number two, but maybe just looks so much better than, let's say, whoever three and four would be, right? I mean, it seemed like they were clearly the two best options at quarterback, the guys most equipped to move the ball down the field. So not surprised that Warren might be that second guy, but it does kind of feel like there is a bit of a gap there, right? Just, again, going solely based off of this practice, seems like there's a little bit of a gap there. And, yeah, Orji, if you say he's number one, I think the gap between one and two is a lot smaller than that gap between two and three. So,
yes, yep.
Right. So that was, you know, that was probably one of my major takeaways was, yeah. And again, Tuttle could be that, could be a guy that would be right there as well. I guess we talk about the portal. I guess I kind of think like, can you find somebody better than Jack Tuttle out of the portal? Because him getting healthy and entering this race, at least right now, would almost is almost akin to getting a guy from the portal in the spring session, and a guy, you know, because he hasn't been fully healthy. So, you know,
that's I see what you're saying. I was gonna say, I think
it's almost similar to getting a portal guy that, since he really hasn't gotten to fully immerse himself in this quarterback race yet.
Yeah, but I think we've always said, I think we even said it on Friday or Thursday, I said, you know, don't go get a transfer portal quarterback. You're not willing to lose up to two scholarship quarterbacks over.
Right. Yes.
And I would say anyone in that category is significantly better than Jack Tuttle. Like, right. You got to get someone who has started at the Power 5 level. Really, that's what you're looking for. Because Alex Orji, one career pass. Jaden Denegal, five career passes. Davis Warren, I think it's a little bit more. But he also has not. It's not like he has tons of experience. Tuttle actually has thrown almost 200 passes in his career, but it was, in my mind, I think if they were to pursue a guy in the portal, I think it would be a little bit more of a prove it. It would be a proven
right.
guy.
Yeah. And that was kind of what I was saying. Like, it has to be a, you know, we said if you can improve the roster, and that Michigan should be attractive for any major candidate that enters the portal at the quarterback position, you would think at this point.
So real quick on that note, though, because Kirk Campbell spoke with reporters after the game and he talked about it. And I give him credit that he didn't like bristle at the question. He actually did outright say they are looking for wide receivers, which I think is a notable distinction from what he said about the quarterbacks, where he said roster evaluation is always part of the process. But right now, that's not something we're looking at in terms of adding a quarterback in the transfer portal. Now, I will acknowledge that he probably can't say anything else. Like, he can't come into the after the spring game with Davis Warren speaking on one side of the room, Alex Orji speaking on the other side, like, and be like, yeah, we're not really thrilled with any of these guys. Like, he's not going to say that. If they do pursue a quarterback in the portal, it's going to be, you know, the next few days they meet with the quarterbacks, they say this, they offer their feedback on the spring they had, and they say, for these reasons, we're going to pursue a quarterback. You know, just general, like, courtesy and, like, human decency. Yeah, that's something I mentioned the other day. You know, Michigan takes a lot of pride. They're not trying to hang players out to dry with their portal pursuits. They generally are looking for players that help the team and don't disrupt the culture and the team. And so I guess, you know, when I hear that comment, my thought is, okay, maybe they really aren't looking for one. But also, I will note that that's probably exactly what he had to say. He probably rehearsed getting that question before he came and spoke to the media. So we'll see what happens there. I will say Alex Orji and Davis Warren, both, they did not flinch or shy away from the reality that Michigan might get a transfer portal quarterback. I mean, they said they would embrace it. They said anyone that you know their coaches trust to help the team, like, we are going to assume that they're here to help the team and we'll embrace them like family. Now, again, that's what you say in the press conference, is not what you say behind closed doors, but it does seem like that was a big point of emphasis, is that this, and Michigan fans can credit JJ McCarthy for this, the quarterback room has a much better camaraderie and cohesion, you know, I think Davis Warren talked about it, than maybe a few years ago. It's a little bit less, like, the competitive waters are hot, but the personality waters are not hot, if that makes sense. Like, they're trying to, everyone wants to be the starting quarterback, but, you know, this is a Orji and Denegal, they're roommates, right? They hang out all the time. They have a whiteboard in their house that they're always, like, drawing up plays or concepts on. You know, the quarterback room, they go bowling together. You know, they're actually a cohesive group that realizes, you know, what's good for the bee is good for the hive. So I think that's something to keep in mind, is that, you know, Michigan, if they add a quarterback, obviously you have to look at your quarterback room and say, can this quarterback room win the Big Ten title? And can this quarterback room win the national title? If the answer is no, knowing the defense and the offensive line, then yeah, you go look for somebody. But I think Michigan also, it's not lost on Michigan's coaches that, hey, this culture, this cohesiveness that this team has, not every quarterback is going to be able to come in and be a net positive. Even if they are a better passer, have more experience, like, you need someone who's going to help elevate the room and elevate the team beyond just passing ability or, you know, quarterback experience. But yeah, I agree with you, Davis Warren. I mean, this is honestly his third spring game in a row where he's looked really impressive. I know he had a little bit of injury last fall, which kind of led to, I think a lot of people just kind of wrote him off, you know, in the limited action he got last year. But he had an injury, if I'm not mistaken, that he was playing through. And really, last spring game, pretty nice job. And then the spring game before, you know, that was when people were kind of like, maybe he is the guy next after J.J. McCarthy. So, unique recruitment. We've written all about it, obviously, with leukemia. He was playing at multiple, he was like, had a prep school year. COVID kind of wiped out any last chance efforts he could come up with to get somewhere on scholarship. And Michigan's liked him from day one, confirmed that. I'm sure you can too, Steve. I mean, this is not, you know, people sometimes think walk-ons, you know, it's a feel good story. I mean, he's a good quarterback, and he is the most experienced in terms of Michigan system on the team. You know, his fourth year? So I wouldn't rule him out at all. I mean, I really think, I almost kind of wonder, yeah, like, what is that gap between Orji and Warren? Cause I don't think it's particularly large. Anything else to add on the quarterback situation at Michigan?
No, not in particular. I think, yeah, Davis Warren, probably the biggest takeaway there, and that, yeah, my overall opinion on how they should approach the portal hasn't changed, you know. And like you said, it's important to note that has to be handled differently in a public setting than other positions. There's no harm, no foul for Kirk Campbell to say that they need receivers. I mean, it doesn't matter. Even if you like the guys you have at the top,
even Fred Moore, you know, we were asking him about it after the game today. He was on board too. He's like, yeah, we're getting tired in practice. There's only like five or six of us.
Yeah.
So, you know, right. It's like, they're like, yeah, we definitely could use some more bodies. Now, you know, there's still some politics of like, oh, I want to be number one, whatever. But yes, quarterback, very different repercussions than adding a seventh receiver would have.
Yep. So I agree.
So other offensive takeaways, I'll be honest, I offensive line, very hard to evaluate in the spring game. Yeah, I'm sitting there in the press box and I'm like, oh yeah, I never have any offensive line takeaways. Although I did take, you know, the couple handful of plays I did watch. I'm intrigued by Blake Frazier and Evan Link. Those are, you know, Frazier's probably more a year or two away just because of his weight, but Link looks big. And I thought they both had some pretty nice plays. I think the gap between them and Jeffrey Percy and Andrew Gentry is smaller than I came into today thinking that it was. Elsewhere, boy, Fred Moore. I mean, I cited him as my receiver that I was watching closest. Pretty impressive. I mean, he's 6'1", so he can play outside, but he can get to full speed very quickly. And his full speed, I mean, he basically just outran the whole defense. I don't know how many starters were on the field for that, but that 48-yard touchdown, probably one of the more impressive plays of the day. And then Kendrick Bell, we mentioned not a lot of receivers, so some of it's by default, but I feel like, you know, he had the 42-yard touchdown grab and felt like he had a few plays where you're like, hey, there he is. Hey, he's someone that could definitely be a factor. On a tight end, pretty impressed with the depth. I don't think that's necessarily new information, but seeing Zach Marshall, seeing Deacon Tonielli, seeing Marlon Klein, seeing Max Bredesen, I thought he had a nice contested grab. You know, I feel like you're starting to see that room once again kind of replenish, reload, come together as a room that isn't just the Colston Loveland show. Running back, I hard to tell if it's Michigan's defense looking really good or Michigan's offense You know, not a super strong day running the football. Donovan Edwards looked pretty good, but I think there were a lot of like 1 or 2 yard gains in the game. And I mean, it's just kind of funny because I think, you know, the national TV deal, they were hyping this up as this like, you know, big clash. And then you're like, oh yeah, most football practices have a lot of plays that just don't work, or a lot of, you know, because the defense knows the offense's playbook, and obviously Michigan's defense, I would say, is further ahead than the offense. But what are some other things that jumped out to you on offense from the spring game?
So the running game, yeah, but I was intrigued with how Tavier Dunlap performed and how much Michigan seemed to use, like, let him sort of
15
play,
carries,
right? That's feels like quite a bit in a spring game. And my thought upon seeing that, like seeing him get 10 plus carries, and also you weren't listening to the telecast, obviously. They made a point to say that when talking about that third back spot, that Dunlap was the first name that Tony Alford mentioned as a fourth year guy. I want to say, right? Dunlap's got it's at least,
I think so, his
third or fourth year
upperclassman for sure,
right?
Yeah,
you wonder if extensive usage in a situation like a spring game, like scrimmage like that, is Michigan's way of like not wanting a guy like that to leave, right? Because you know you got Jordan Marshall coming in this summer. Dunlap's always been a guy that's been there, but has never really gotten any kind of. I just kind of wonder, piecing together the fact that Alford brought him up, and then, yeah, you see him get 15 carries today. And again, I thought he looked pretty solid when the plays weren't totally being blown up, right? Like you said, that's going to happen in these types of situations. But it was good to see him get some extended run and to do something with it, though. Like I'm now more intrigued by that third back spot than maybe I was going into the game. Because, well, Benjamin Hall looked fine, too, when he got, again, not blown up in the backfield. He's really good at making that first cut when he puts his foot in the ground, you know, if he needs like wherever the hole is or whatever. He's just seems like he has very, very good vision. We talked about his lower body in the last podcast, just how like he's just like stout, you know. So yeah, that was one thing. They need depth at receiver, obviously, and they do. I think they need a little bit more talent, but I was still impressed with the guys that were out. Like Tyler Morris looked good. He looks quick. He looks reliable. You already mentioned Fred Moore and Kendrick Bell. It's nice to see him maybe step up. And again, Ronnie was such a abnormal type deal as a guy who was so under-recruited and came right in as a freshman and played. You know, so with Kendrick, maybe it was going to take a little bit more time, but it at this, like, just watching him today and seeing, like, it's hard not to imagine somewhere down the road that he won't be some kind of contributor at receiver, right? I mean, I feel better in saying that after seeing him today. Tight end, pretty much what you mentioned, very diverse, even within, like, the like tight end can be pretty, like, but a very diverse group of, like, players, even as it pertains to, like, just in the receiving game alone. Like Marshall looks like a really intriguing player as far as, yeah. Like, and the other thing was Tony Elliott looks huge. I mean, that dude is big. He'll be interesting too, but to see Zach Marshall, I thought was the most intriguing guy out of that group. You know, Klein flashed like we expected him to. I almost kind of chalk him up as like a, you know, wasn't really necessarily looking to see anything specific from him. I think it's expected that he's going to be a contributor this year. But yeah, I thought that Zach Marshall was pretty intriguing as far as the receiving goes. And one thing I wrote at the beginning of spring practice, and it seemed like it played out, is Michigan really does want to carve out a little bit of an expanded role for Max Bredesen offensively. And I think they showed that a little bit today. Like we caught a couple glimpses of that. So again, they need guys at receiver, but I was pleasantly surprised by the play that they did get from the guys that were expecting to contribute this year.
I can agree with that. I mean, because I think Fred Moore showed exactly what, when I, you know, include him in the players to watch in the spring game, that's what I was kind of watching for. Because there was a lot of buzz about him last spring and summer, and I know the players have often cited him as kind of the next guy. But yeah, to see it with your own eyes, see the speed, see the quickness, you're kind of like, okay, And I think it does help Michigan in its transfer portal pursuit of receivers, because I don't think they need more receivers, but I don't know that they necessarily like need the two highest ranked receivers in the transfer portal. You certainly offer, you know, anyone who can help you. But I guess what I'm trying to say is like, it takes a little bit of the pressure off that they have certain needs that are met by the receiver room. And so maybe you do take a guy who is more of a long-term transfer commitment. You know, it's not just like an immediate, you know, plug and play. He's here for 1 year and then he's gone type player. It can be someone who kind of grows in the Michigan system. So I guess where I'm trying to go with that is, yeah, it takes some pressure off knowing that you have Tyler Morris, Fred Moore. I don't believe Samaj Morgan had a catch, but we've seen plenty of him in games. I think there's a lot of comfort within Michigan's program in its capabilities at the slot. You know, they got a lot of guys who are quick, who can be shifty, you know, who can do the after catch stuff. I think the next pursuit, if they were in the portal, would be to like a downfield, like a Cornelius Johnson outside type receiver who can get open downfield. And also block really well. You know, it's going to be a huge part of Michigan's game this season is guys running outside, whether it's Edwards, you know, Alex Orji, it could be a litany of guys. So yeah, you do need some guys who can block as well. All right, with that, we're going to hit a quick break. On the other side, we'll talk about the things that stood out to us about Michigan's defense in the spring game. You're listening to the Wolverine 24/7 podcast.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Baseball has begun, which means you need to listen to Fantasy Baseball Today in 5, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. Join Scott White, Chris Towers, and me, Frank Sanfel, every Monday through Saturday as we deliver all of your fantasy baseball needs in just 5 minutes. We'll break down the biggest performers, news, and prospects who could make an impact this season. Make sure to download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, the Odyssey app, and everywhere else podcasts are found.
So, Steve, I went first last time, but maybe we can go position-ish by position. Starting with the defensive line, got to see some of the depth that we've been hearing about. Obviously, we saw the starters as well. What jumped out to you about Michigan's defensive line in this spring game?
Honestly, so again, I always look more at like sort of the second-level guys. Michigan, they have some just physically impressive players at both edge and it's sort of the rotation in the interior between Brandt, Etta, Tumba. I mean, he looks, you can see why Mike Elston maybe wanted to, I wouldn't say roll the dice there, but kind of, you know, because he was a Frenchman. I don't remember how extensive his recruitment was because Michigan got a commitment from him so quickly. Dominic Nichols, the early enrollee, true freshman. Man, there's a lot of they're solid. Their front four, their top four, their starting four look, or as even Joel Klatt said during the broadcast, he thinks he would take Michigan starting four up front this year over anybody in college football. You know, I think they're right there, but man, there's some, it just looks like there's some real potential behind those guys. TJ Guy was one of the best players on the field again. I think it's clear he's going to have ample opportunity this season. But yeah, I think overall, you can't help but be impressed with just the physical, like just how, I guess I'd go back to this. I remember the first game I ever covered was when Michigan played Alabama at Cowboy Stadium. And I remember just looking at the two teams and just seeing the difference physically between the two teams just as they walked out. You know, even guys who weren't playing for Bama just looked different. It kind of feels like Michigan has gotten there with that type of deal where, you know, like, again, I keep thinking about Kumba looks like a guy who would win that, like, first off the bus type award, sure. Yeah. You know, and him specifically still raw, you know, I don't know if he's a guy that can emerge as a contributor this year or not, but either way, it just up front, you know, I just feel like, and it made me excited to see what they get with their two summer guys at edge with Devon Baxter and Lugard out of both out of DC area. Those guys are supposed to be are listed as both longer, like longer and bigger, more weight than Dominic Nichols is. So, like, holy crap, you know, there could be a lot of really interesting looking dudes in that room. And you always want it, like, you know, Michigan, I don't know if they hosted him today or not, but the Kent State kid, CJ West, was, I believe, was supposed to be at the spring game today. He's been viewed as somebody who would be like an actually like an upgrade from Cam Good in that like fourth or fifth spot in the defensive tackle rotation. Man, like, it just, I guess if you're Michigan, you just have to feel so good about what you have on both sides of the trenches. And not just for the now, but even in watching today, as long as these guys continue to develop, you got to feel pretty good about the future at on the defensive line as well.
Generally agree across the board. Yeah, I agree with you on TJ Guy, especially. You know, he's someone that I would argue is not even, I mean, you can still classify as a question mark. I'm personally not going to. I'm kind of at the point where, yeah, he'll be the probably, I assume, behind Josiah Stewart, kind of in that Sam Edge type role. I think he's ready. I think he's ready for the rotation. You know, I think the question at Edge would just be, you know, Derek Moore and the guy behind him, how much of a drop off will there be? Because that'll just determine the snap counts. Last year, they were really able to go 50-50. If you look at like Jalen Harrell and Josiah Stewart's snap counts, like it was almost like even most games. That's the dream if you're a defensive coach. And frankly, if you're a defensive lineman too, that's also a dream because in the fourth quarter, you're not tired. You're not waking up Sunday like, ah, geez, like we got to practice tomorrow. You know, your legs are staying fresh through what's an increasingly long college football season. So you're continuing to find that depth. I agree with you. Felt like TJ Guy really stood out. Keyshawn Bennett, someone who made a number of plays, kind of more so, I would argue, in the section of the game where it was second string on second string a little bit more, but at the same time, you know, seeing guys make the play, seeing guys, you know, seeing their bend, seeing how they get around the line. I felt like Derek Moore looked a little bit quicker and more athletic than I remember. Looks like I wouldn't be surprised to hear.
He had a pass breakup,
Yeah, he
right?
was in
Yeah.
coverage and not like right near the line of scrimmage either. I mean, it was
Yeah.
on the
And
sideline.
it wasn't like he just happened to be out there by where the ball was. Like, it was legit, like it was a legit PBU. You know, that was what was so impressive about it.
I do feel like, I mean, that is the one position group, edge and a little bit of tackle. I mean, it does seem like they're able to do this every year, and they recruit for that level. You know, this year there's a little bit less proven depth at edge and tackle, but at the same time, I think, as you noted, there's good size, there's good athleticism, and I think the culture and the coaching over the past couple years has set them up well. You know, yeah, there's a number of guys really. I'm looking at the roster now. I don't probably not going to list every single one of them, but yeah, there's a bunch of guys who look pretty good. And I think on the inside, I'm very intrigued by Etta and Cam Brandt because I think both of them, they're kind of those tweener position wise. You know, the Mike Morris is probably the best comparison, but I know like Chris Wormley was that way as well. Not 310 pounders, right? Not true interior guys all the way. I mean, they can play on the edge. They can play, you know, in different positions across that defensive line. But yeah, seeing them, you know, those are probably the two. I cited them as players I'm watching closely in the spring game, and you definitely saw flashes of, hey, these guys could help this year. You know, this isn't just a have a fun spring game, and then we'll see what you are in a year. Like, you know, these are guys who I think could help Michigan sooner than later. You know, when the
Hey,
defensive
real
line,
quick, Zach,
yeah.
sorry. Do we think Etta is 6'5", 295 after watching
Def
him where
yes.
he's listed?
Yes on 6'5".
Yeah.
I couldn't tell you with any
Because
but
physically, like, I thought body wise, he does kind of remind me of Chris Wormley. You saying that is
okay.
what sparked me to actually look up. But I think Chris was over 300 by the time he was making like a huge impact. I want to say I could be mis. I mean, it's weird to say, but it's been a while since Chris Wormley's been around. But But physically, he did kind of remind me, now that you say that, he kind of reminded me of a Chris Wormley like body type. And yeah, those that's and it with him specifically, it kind of plays into how we've like there's been a lot of reporting and like it's almost like some inconsistencies in what position he actually is. So he's listed as an edge.
So actually, I talked to him after the game.
Okay,
so,
good. Let's get this figured out.
He's mostly inside. The coaches want him primarily inside.
Yep.
But, you know, he likes the edge a little bit more. So I guess in a sense, he didn't quite give the answer.
Well, but, well I mean, that makes sense. I mean, that's, you know, it's just like a tight end versus wide receiver almost. You know, any guy who's capable of playing both would rather get probably rather play on the outside. But some guys are just better fits.
Yeah.
You know, so.
So he told us he's around 280 now. I forgot.
Okay, yeah, that makes a little bit more sense. So yeah, he'd have a little bit of ways to go, but just the way he sort of looks does remind me of Chris Wormley.
Yeah, so. I think he's kind of looking at Mike Morris as the comparison too, where I think he was what 290 ish, but it was a very lean 290, you know, where he could still be quick on the edge, kind of that anchor edge spot, you know, the Rashawn Gary, the Derek Moore, you know, that's, you're doing a lot of defensive end roles too in that kind of position. So anyway, I think part of it, I think it's an interesting dynamic with him and Brant as well, I guess. Brant, I think he just played more D tackle than edge last year. But I think with both of them, Michigan's just excited to get them on the field. And they're just kind of working them out, having them eat really smart. You know, they're not necessarily like telling them, hey, you got to get up to 300 or hey, you got to get down to 275. And so it kind of just depends. It sounds very simplistic, but like it might just depend on like how they look come fall camp starting in August. Like if he's looking a lot bigger, you know, it might just be, hey, you're just an D tackle now. But at the same time, if he wants to play edge, you know, maybe staying lean, staying quick, you know, continuing to showcase that bend and that pass rushing ability. Players do have some control here about what they play if they happen to just be better at one than the other. But I'm very intrigued by both of them because I think the ceiling's very high. I think, you know, there's growing optimism within Michigan's program about their NFL draft capabilities that you know, they can kind of emerge. Whether it's I think there's more optimism that it can be this fall, but even if it's not this fall, by the end of their careers. So moving to linebacker, it took about half a second to notice Jayshon Barham, the Maryland transfer. I mean, he's definitely going to be a high impact player.
He doesn't look like a linebacker.
No, he like
so.
What does he? I mean, he kind of like he reminds me a little bit of Makari Page, where he's like.
Yeah,
really tall, but then really also, good length, and then he's like skinny almost.
But he's also like he's like rocked too, though. Like he almost looks.
Yeah,
he weirdly looks like a guy who could play edge linebacker and safety. If that even makes any, you know,
he reminds me so much. Clemson used to pump out players like that.
Sure. Yeah.
Under Simmons. Venables. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Where it's like they have the height of the edge, height and reach of the edge, quickness of the safety, but they play linebacker.
Yep. No, that's a good. Good call on that one. You know, Michigan's plan with him was to use him obviously primarily a linebacker for them, but they've, and you know, we saw it, I think a couple times today, you're going to see him on the edge in passing downs, especially. That's why, you know, and we'll talk about linebacker. It's important for a third and fourth guy to really step up there so that they can maybe use him a little bit more as a chess piece. In certain situations. So, oh yeah, hard. You talk about first off, it would be one of either him or, like I said, just Kumba, impressive, but Barham's another guy that just looks like, he looks like an NFL player. Like, just physically just looks like a guy in the NFL.
I could agree with that. And linebacker, we saw Houseman. I feel like, one cool thing I really like about Houseman, I feel like he tackles and means it. Like, I really just feel like he might be the hardest tackler, even though Junior Colson was an extremely effective and efficient tackler. I almost feel like Houseman, you know, he can just bring a little extra oomph on a more consistent basis. If he tackles you, you're remembering that tackle a couple plays later. I think Jimmy Rolder had that nice pass rush. I didn't necessarily track him every play, but you saw Rolder, some of the quickness.
He stood up. He was a guy I think that flashed a little bit. I'll tell you who I'm, and I haven't looked. I gotta bet the board has already made a point of conversation, but Cole Sullivan looks, immediately like a guy who he was kind of the de facto staff pick on the recruiting side of things. Sam and Bryce and I kind of are de facto only by ranking because we had been hyping, we'd hyped him up for basically since they got him, but as like the quote sleeper of the class, even like I said, the amount of attention, rightfully so, that we gave him, our users probably don't really look at him as much as a sleeper because, you know, but to the layman, you see he's ranked a 3-star 87. You know, if you don't follow it that closely, you might be like, okay, well, you know, hopefully this guy becomes good. Like, we already expect him to be good, but he is another one that just looks like, you know, he's going to have to fill out a little bit more. Obviously, he just got to campus, but I mean, at the very least, you're going to see him on extensively on special teams this year. I'll be shocked if you don't see that, but man, he's an interesting prospect immediately. So he's another one at backer that really kind of jumped out to me.
I can agree with that. Yeah, I feel like there were a couple plays where, I think it was even like third down, fourth down plays where you're actually like, not that every play doesn't matter, but like there's a little bit more heightened pressure for someone to go out there and make a play. And feel like he did. In the secondary, I'll tell you what, Steve, you're welcome to disagree or have a different stance. I'm notably less concerned about the secondary than I was entering today. In terms of, I think there's still room to add portal players if the right prospect emerges, but I think Michigan can be a little pickier about who it adds because I came away pretty impressed with really everybody. I felt like Zeke Berry made some nice plays. I felt like DJ Waller, Jair Hill, all these players that we've talked about on this podcast multiple times, it feels like, that could step up. Jaden McBurrows. I think they've got a really athletic secondary. I think the next step is just making sure that they're ready when the actual game comes, but hard to tell, how much of that is the passing game and we talk about the pass game and the receivers kind of being where Michigan's the furthest behind. So maybe this athletic secondary looks extra good in this particular matchup, but I don't know. Eye test in terms of how players are moving, the plays that were being made, the hand skills, when the ball is coming in, I feel like the secondary one has an extremely high ceiling, but two might be further along in terms of replacing the departing starters, the Mikey Sainristils, the Josh Wallaces, the Rod Moores. Michigan might be further ahead than we were giving them credit for, just even a couple days ago. I felt pretty good about Michigan being an athletic secondary after watching this game. Your thoughts?
I'm echoing your ceiling comment in particular. Again, we saw him a decent amount last year, but man, DJ Waller has a chance to be a really special player, I think, at cornerback. So does Jair Hill, too. Yeah, I mean, those two guys jumped off the page. It's actually pretty crazy impressive when you think that, Rod Moore is only not playing because he got hurt. He would be out there otherwise. And then you lost Keon Sabb to the transfer portal, which, again, I mean, that's the norm now. It's like teams are going to lose guys, obviously, but imagine even just having one of those two guys still in the mix as well. I mean, and then to me, you're talking about, like an already good to great defensive backfield that could be like elite with a breakout season from, one of those two sophomore corners. So yeah, absolutely. I just had something wrote down. Oh, see if you agree. I think if you're Michigan right now, I think your best case scenario is I think you'd want McBurrows to take that nickel spot, and then you can slide Zeke Berry alongside Makari Page, right? I kind of feel like that's what you would be sort of hoping for if you're Michigan. And then you have a veteran like Quentin Johnson that you can rotate in as well at the safety spot. And again, it's hard to keep a track of every single player. I don't know if I saw much of Brandon Hillman out there. Was he out there?
I did not write anything down for him.
So Because I know he's another guy that Michigan super, super high on at that safety spot. But of the guys,
and I feel
that,
like he got some praise earlier this spring.
Yeah, that doesn't. I expect that. Yeah. So, but yeah, I guess, you know, and McBurrow's look great. The one thing about McBurrow's, not afraid to, like, you know, he's a guy that, as far as production goes relative to Mike Sainristil, still, I think McBurrow's can be as effective as Mikey was, as just as it pertains to the running game. The coverage is something that's, you know, that's going to be a hard ask to repeat what Sainristil has done the last couple seasons. But McBurrow's plays the run really, really well at that position. And again, still an asset defensively against the pass, but just, you know, I think, you know, yeah, if you're Michigan, I feel like that's what you're kind of crossing your fingers. Like, McBurrow's can kind of take that spot, and that allows Zeke Berry to kind of continue to develop at that safety spot, which, I mean, I got to think of the, on the telecast, I mean, we may have, just from a play-by-play standpoint, may have heard Zeke Berry's name more than just about anybody today. So he definitely made his mark. I know he was super highly ranked out of high school. Maybe took him a little, like, I think people looked at him as a potential, like, year one kind of guy. Not always the case at the safety position, but definitely has the traits of a potentially elite. You know, again, we talk about DJ Waller. Is that so tantalizing at the corner spot? I think the same thing is still true for Zeke Berry at the safety position, just because he has the prerequisite athletically, as far as, like, it being elite. It's just a matter of, with him, it was always about consistency, play to play, and yeah, just sort of soaking in that defensive scheme a little bit more, because the athletic traits have not always just been there, but they stand out relative to most guys at his position.
I agree. And health is also a part of it, right? Just because a player don't like announce an injury doesn't mean that they aren't working through injuries. I believe Zeke, we talked to him after the game as well, actually. And I believe he talked about, you know, getting injured pretty early on last season. And it just, he had had this fall camp where he was rising and ascending, and then it was a setback very early in the season, so it's kind of hard to rally back from that. But yeah, I do agree with you. It's hard to watch his high school tape and not think that he can be a really big factor in Michigan's defense. And I do kind of agree with where your head's at in terms of, or the optimal situation is probably McBurrow's winning the nickel job and just making that his own, because I think that was such a value add for Mikey Sainristil. Was, you know, he wasn't like a corner playing nickel, he wasn't a safety playing nickel, he was like a nickel playing nickel. And so yeah, if McBurrow's can really shine in that type of role, I think that does allow Michigan just to be deeper at a couple different spots. And yeah, you can have Zeke Berry on the field more. Quentin Johnson, by the way, he did not play today. It sounds like he made his decision to return too late to enroll academically. So he's a part of the program, but he can't participate in practices until he's re-enrolled in his master's program.
Huh, interesting. I would also add, by the way, real quick, just so I don't forget your name, Cody Jones' name came up a few times today too, at the Mays nickel spot, you know. Mm-hmm. So I assume McBurrow, again, he would, like, I'm talking best case scenario, I think Michigan would want him to be the guy to back up McBurrow's at that nickel spot again, because I know they've been moving Zeke Berry around, and I get it, and I think they should if they have the opportunity. But, you know, like, well, yeah, when you said a nickel playing, when you talk about nickels playing nickel, you know, I think Michigan would really love Cody Jones to sort of eventually be the heir apparent there. Again, we talk about depth. The spring portal is still open, so you never know how patient. And I'm not trying to speak of anybody specifically. It's just something to kind of keep in mind.
Yeah,
we're talking about, you know, second team, even third team type guys this season. You know, you're not sure who's going to hang on. But yeah, Cody Jones, I thought, made a couple plays as well today.
I mean, there could be, you know, we can talk about these different position groups where it feels like they had guys step up. There could be someone in the portal who, due to recruiting connections, due to, you know, he checks like every box Michigan's looking for. I feel like, if I'm remembering correctly, Josh Wallace was kind of that last year. Now, Michigan was looking for a cornerback, but he entered late but he checked so many boxes. He had played for Don Brown. He played for Mike McCray, I believe, was a coach at UMass. He, you know, had several years of experience. Like, they had a lot of connections that made it make a lot of sense. And so even though I think he didn't commit until like mid-June, he played a huge role in Michigan's success. So, yeah, I mean, I don't think they need to search in the portal as much. It doesn't mean that they can't or won't or shouldn't or don't. I mean, they still could, but I guess how I would put it is I think they can be a little bit pickier about who they add. I don't know if I'm ranking the positions where they need a transfer the most. I think I moved to cornerback and safety down in the rankings today. All right, Steve, anything else, anything you wrote down that you forgot to mention before we sign off from this podcast?
What do you think about the field goal kicking, right?
So it was real windy.
Okay, I wondered. I did. That's always a position. That's obviously always been a position Michigan takes very seriously.
Well, and it's a position where I think if they don't like what Adam Samaha brings, which I have not heard that, but I'm saying if they don't, like, I think I saw just even yesterday, Miami of Ohio's kicker who went 27 for 28 on field goals last year entered the portal.
Right.
There's, you know, yeah, like you can definitely spot. Add.
Yeah. Yes.
Transfer portal kickers. I mean, James Turner, a definite value add for Michigan last year. You know, they got him out of Louisville from the transfer portal. It was pretty windy. Like, I didn't take the big coat, but I kind of wish I had taken the big coat today. Like, cause it was, I think it was technically like 44 or whatever, but it felt quite a bit colder. And I believe both of his field goals were into the wind, or his field goal attempts. So I will say you can't completely dismiss the concern because you haven't seen him kick at the college level. This is Adam Samaha, very highly touted recruit, spent last season redshirting. I talked to him before the Rose Bowl. He said he's looking at this as, you know, he was kind of viewing this as his opportunity to cement himself as Michigan's starting kicker for several years. I guess from a depth chart perspective, he's done that. But you're right, Michigan can't, if they have national championship goals, that has to be every staff member, every player, every position, every role within the program's facilities and think, okay, is this person operating at a national championship level? And Samaha might be. This might genuinely just be too windy of a day, bad day, whatever. It's definitely something. I mean, because I think another good example, Steve, is Tommy Dolman did not have a good day punting the football. I don't know if you saw the stats, but I think he had multiple punts under 35 yards. Yeah, he had a 36 yarder, a 40 yarder, and an 18 yarder. So that was worse than he was in any game last season, if memory serves. So I think I'm willing to give Adam Samaha a little bit of slack because it's just probably not a great day to be a special teams player. But if you're Michigan, you have to look at the whole body of work. I mean, if this has been a pattern during the spring, I mean, he's only a redshirt freshman. I don't think he would be like, I don't think it would be like this big offense to him even if he went and added someone with starting experience. But yeah, not a great day for special teams, I would say. Also sometimes they don't even do field goals and punts and kickoffs in this spring game. So definitely that certainly a grain of salt to go with some of those numbers. All right, well, be sure to check out all of our stories recapping the spring game, what we heard, what we learned. Big visit weekend for both sports as well. So be sure to check out all of the intel, all of the analysis, all of the news over at the MichiganInsider.com, Michigan.247sports.com. For Steve Lorenz, I'm Zach Shaw. This has been the Wolverine 24/7 podcast. We'll see you next time.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast wherever you get your podcasts.